The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
2K12, 2012, 201, 2. Football has seen some crazy years. Gareth Bale's got a pair. But this was certainly one of them. With life, death, and all the bits in between. There was the greatest Premier League final ever, the most one-sided Euro final ever, Chelsea, and the spawniest Champions League final ever. There was Harry getting torn between two jobs, getting neither, Rangers going down, racism going up, Terry's armband coming off, Fabio Capello clearing out, PSG, FFP, AVB and RVP, the death of Pier Mario Morosini, the tragedy in Port Said, the return to life of Fabrice Muamba, and some justice for the 96, and 91 goals for Leo Messi. Today, the final action of this year, then, in Football Weekly. Well, Robbie, here we are for our final Football Weekly of the year. Of the year.
He's good, isn't he?
He is good. Of the year. Jacob Steinberg's in the house.
Hello.
Hi, Jacob. John Aston is also in the house.
Hello, Robbie.
And
is everyone called Robbie in here?
Oh, bless.
Spartacus. I mean,
it's a Chevy Singh reference.
It is. Yeah. Yep.
That was good, wasn't it? Okay. I like his moustache.
Yeah. There's a lot to like about him, particularly his habit of addressing Darren Fletcher throughout this 19-minute interview with, well, Robbie.
And also all the people who called in. There's a guy called Thomas. And,
yeah. Anyway, it's New Year's Eve as we record this. You got any big plans for this evening, John?
Nope, not really. No, just a quiet
thinking
one.
Something an N in your alphabet thing.
New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Well, that would be the N, I suppose. Yeah. But no, we have to do it in order, I think. So I want to E. So Eve could be. I think that's cheating, though.
That's
isn't it,
a little really? Bit yeah. cheating. Eve of New Year.
When did you start that?
No, it's been re. There's been a reboot.
Oh right.
It's like the Spider-Man series.
Good. So that's your plans for tonight, and Jacob, since you're the one asking.
You asked.
No, you asked me first.
Oh,
didn't
true,
you?
Yeah. And what are you doing?
I'm having a Chinese.
Yeah. I'm going to my brother's bar.
That's very much the young person's approach to New Year's Eve. Good stuff. Listeners, I hope you have a terrific New Year's Eve. Here's our contribution to it. And we're going to begin, Jacob, with QPR Liverpool. You saw this where?
In Ealing, pub. With some QPR fans and some Liverpool fans, and the Liverpool fans were a bit happier than the QPR fans, who after about 10 minutes weren't really watching the game anymore and were just kind of crying into their pints and at times laughing at their own team, because that was one of the most awful performances I think I've ever seen from a Premier League side. You know, absolutely dreadful.
Now, there's been a lot of Premier League sides and a lot of performances. What was so specially bad about this one?
Partly the idea that Clint Hill could stand up to Luis Suarez. That first goal was one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen. Suarez didn't, although it was good skill, he didn't really have to do anything to get past him. It was just basically kick it forward and run. Mm-hmm. And Clint Hill just sort of ran out of the way, and it was a great finish. And then the second goal again, no one bothers actually trying to get the ball when it rebounds off Anoa, apart from Suarez, who's alive to it. QPR, none of the players seem, when you're in a relegation scrap, the one thing you at least have to do is try. And they have some. They do. The team isn't absolutely. It's not without any talent at all. But no one seems to try to hassle the opposition players, or track the runs, or even get any block-ins. And they just. There's no heart there. There's nothing in the side, because no one seems to care. Basically,
right. Football 365. Very much enjoying Clint Hill's instinctive, what can I do with these foreigners? Arms in the air gesture after every goal.
Well, do you know what the really sad thing is for me? Because I was there the day QPR lost to Stroud, the day they clinched promotion back in 2011. And, you know, Neil Warnock brought the beautiful Football League trophy into the press room afterwards. And you just look back on that optimism and the kind of the way the club was moving forward at the time. After a long time, you know, out of the Premier League, out of the top flight. And the way that club has been warped and sort of disfigured by 18 months in the top flight is just... Yeah, it's frightening, and it's just really, really sad, I find. They are a much worse team now than they were 18 months ago.
All right, Liverpool in the meantime, terrific result for them, without Brendan Rodgers.
Yep.
They're now only 14 points off that second place that Rodgers was talking about, and they're going to be hosting Sunderland on New Year's Day. Do you want to have a quick word about Liverpool? Or yeah, can we not draw too many conclusions from this?
I think that most teams are going to beat that QPR side at the moment. Liverpool played very well in the first half, and when Suarez is in that kind of form, he'll do that to a lot of defences. But QPR had Clint Hill and Ryan Nelson in centre back, and they're both old now. I just find it staggering that in the summer that they had no defenders and they didn't buy any defenders. Mm. They tried to sign Dawson, who didn't want to go. They tried to sign Carvalho, that didn't happen. But they signed people like Granero and Park and Julio Cesar. But then they're still starting the season with Anton Ferdinand and Clint Hill at centre back against Swansea in August, and they lose 5-0. It's just been shocking since then. Mm. And equally, they didn't have really any strikers. I don't think Zamora is particularly good. He got injured anyways. Johnson got injured, and I don't think you can really rely on Cisse apart from a few haircuts here and there.
A few haircuts here and there, valuable though they are. They're now 8 points from safety, and they're going to be at Chelsea on January the 1st.
Yeah, and then they play Spurs, and then they play West Ham away. Then they've got games against Swansea, they've got City, they play United. And that's the run-up until the end of February. So,
how much difference do you think Joe Cole going on loan to Loftus Road is going to make to that?
That's just not what they need.
Right, OK, well, that's fresh off the wires, courtesy of producer Ben. Now, Everton-Chelsea, mentioned them, they've just gone to Goodison Park and come home with a win. I mean, we were impressed with their performance against Villa. We said, well, yeah, when they went and won at Carrow Road, but Goodison Park, John, Goodison Park.
Yeah, it was an impressive result, and particularly impressive the way they managed to turn it around mid-match, because the first half hour it was all Everton, and they could have been two or three goals up, perhaps even should have been two or three goals up. So I suppose, I think we have to give Rafa a bit of credit here. Basically, he got his team playing. Basically, he made the changes necessary to get to change the way the match was going, and Frank Lampard popped up with the two vital goals.
Was it a fair result? I mean, Everton, had they had more shots, more energy?
I think, yeah. I mean, if it had been a draw, nobody from Chelsea could have really complained. But, you know, the Premier League matches quite often, you know, they can be very close affairs. And, you know, a goal scorer such as Lampard can make that vital difference.
One team had a super Frank and the other team didn't. So this brings us on to the exciting contract conversation. The Chelsea legend. He's 34 and earns lots of money. Ergo, he should go. Or he is part of the club's very DNA and contributes vital goals in vital games. He should stay. Jacob, where do you stand?
I think they would be crazy to let him go.
Really?
Yeah. He still has the knack of popping up in the area and scoring those vital goals. Someone else, you know, he kind of mishit that second goal, and someone else, another player, might have gone over. But with Lampard, it just seems to go in. Yeah. It doesn't matter what he does, it goes in. And when they were having that little tricky run around when Di Matteo got sacked and when Rafa came in, Lampard was injured and Terry was injured. And they just seemed to miss that bit of Nelson experience and a bit of a solidity in midfield that he actually gives them. And, yeah.
So you think stay, John?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at the value that Manchester United have got out of Giggs and Scholes sort of post the age of 34,
yep.
Then, I mean, yeah. I mean, why on earth would you let him go?
The fact that they haven't sat down to discuss anything yet suggests that they're not planning to keep him, though.
Or that they're very relaxed about him not going anywhere and they'll sort it out in the summer.
Well, given the amount of rumours flying around at the moment, some probably put out by his agent, you'd think that they might want to. I don't know, you just get the impression that they're not that bothered. Mm. I'm not sure. Anyway, plenty of people pointing out that the amount of money that Chelsea spend on all their managers' permanent vacations, they could afford to splash out a little bit on keeping Super Frank Lampard around a little bit. Well, various people mentioning all the money they splash out on keeping a variety of managers on gardening leave, they could quite happily extend Lampard's contract and then some. But anyway, it's going to be an interesting January transfer window. In the meantime, they are 4 points now from City, with probably some big-name striker arriving over January.
And a game in hand as well.
Oh, yeah, they have a game in hand as well.
Southampton. So, yeah.
Potentially 1 point from City. Mm. All right. And they've got a game against QPR as well coming up on January the 1st. Can't say fairer than that. yeah, Everton in the meantime will try and pick themselves up when they visit Newcastle, which brings us on to Saturday's big game. Newcastle's visit to the Emirates. Extraordinary match this, no doubt you've seen. 10 goals, 7 for Arsenal, 3 for Theo Walcott. Present at the Emirates was Amy Lawrence, who joins us now. Amy, will you be my date for the end of the year?
There'll be hijinks in our house.
Are you having a party?
Yeah, but a party with little people, so It's not going to be as exciting as the good old days.
What time do they get put in bed?
Well, I was kind of thinking we might subtly switch around all the clocks so that when it hits about 9 o'clock, it's going to say midnight. So
yeah.
I'm going to extend that Christmas feeling. And make,
does that mean they'll be 3 hours behind for the rest of the year?
Hopefully not, because I don't really want to get up at like 4 in the morning.
Right. Amy, that's amazing. Great plan.
Thanks. Top tip for anyone out there who, you know...
It's not the first time I've heard it, you mendacious parent, you. Listen, how are you anyway? How was your Christmas? Did you get along to Arsenal Newcastle?
I did, actually, which was, a very festive occasion. It's not often... I was trying to think of when I've ever seen 10 goals before, and somebody helpfully reminded me of the Manchester United 8, Arsenal 2 scoreline from fairly recently, but as I wasn't actually at that game... I convinced myself that I don't think I've ever seen 10 goals very often in one game. I certainly haven't seen 8 goals in one half very often.
Right. And was the mood suitably lightened among the Arsenal fans? That they don't want their Arsenal back, they're quite happy for the other people to have it for a while longer?
Well, I mean, apart from the fact that I had the classic bloke behind me who I've known for a very long time, let's just say... I mean, it's a family show, so I won't be repeating his terminology, but he's not being convinced any longer by Arsene Wenger, even if Arsenal score 7 goals and win 4 games on the trot, and there are some signs of light at the end of the tunnel.
Is it Piers Morgan?
So, not quite, some people still have the capacity to beat themselves up over supposedly enjoyable days out at a certain amount of expense, which strikes me as slightly weird, but there you go. I would say on the whole, obviously, it was a very jolly atmosphere, apart from for the Newcastle fans, for whom it was undoubtedly a long journey home.
No, they had the best time, because surely the whole point of being a football fan is the masochism involved.
I think I go along with that to an extent. I'm not sure about the best thing, but it's certainly a big part of it. And I think if you don't have the horror shows, then the nice things are not quite as enthralling.
Okay, now P. Moriarty tweets in live saying, how long can you go without mentioning the Walcott contract? I say 4 minutes, you're wrong. Ha, P. Moriarty. Walcott, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, Amy, is it a wide attacking midfielder? That's very much the question.
Well, I think that I still feel there is some convincing to do. Obviously, on the basis of that performance, you turn around and say, Walcott looks every inch, the centre-forward you want. To my amazement, in the sense that I have to admire, I never thought that he really had the capacity to be the lone striker, if you like, because there's obviously so much need to be doing all that extra help for the team, giving your team a breather and holding the ball up and bringing others into play. And that never really seemed like that was ever going to be a part of his game. And I'm still not convinced it is, because although he was fantastic, it wasn't really needed in that performance. But if you can imagine, I mean, Arsenal have got games coming up in January against Man United, Chelsea and Liverpool. And if Walcott is going to play as a sort of lone front man, and particularly with some difficult away games occasionally, I'm not sure it's going to work. But as an option, you remember you still have Giroud, who nearly scored a hat-trick in a very small cameo appearance at the end and is improving and looking much more the part. You've got to factor in, obviously, that Newcastle looked tired towards the end, but that last 10 minutes was undoubtedly a big message that Arsenal feel that they've got a bit more option at centre-forward level. I mean, in some ways, you say they're probably the second happiest person after Theo Walcott's agent is Arsene Wenger, who, with perfect timing, can turn around and go, you want me to sign another centre-forward?
Give us the contract latest, then, on Theo Walcott and on Demba Ba, possibly, as well. What's the latest?
It looks like with Ba, who was also very good and had an excellent game for Newcastle, Chelsea seem to be in pole position at the moment. You find with players when they've got... There are so few really, really talented players available and buyable, and particularly, buyable without them costing an absolute fortune. So when you have a player like Ba, who's proven, and indeed a player like Walcott, and maybe slightly less proven, but has so much potential, that are buyable fairly cheap because of their contract situation. There's not that much talent around, so people are almost able to fight each other. It's so much the players' market. So I think once somebody like Chelsea, if they are genuinely interested in Barr, becomes involved, then it's difficult to see that other clubs who might have been interested in him, like Arsenal, might be able to take pole position there. With and Walcott, Theo? I think the most obvious thing is that, bearing in mind Arsenal were very willing to sell him last summer and didn't really find a suitor, and Walcott couldn't find the club that was going to fulfil his requirements at that stage, there was a lot of thought that he would go in January, because, as is typical of Arsenal, if they can make some money out of someone whose contract is running down, they will do. But I think the way that he's played, actually, in the last couple of months, they can't justify taking £5 million or something for the next 6 months of his contract, because options are still fairly thin on the ground. You know, you don't really want to be in a position where you're relying on Jovino again if Giroud gets injured or something like that. So I would expect for certain that he won't go in January.
There's been some talk in Italy, Amy, of him maybe going to Juventus. Is he the kind of player, do you think, who'd like to, in a kind of reversal of the Thierry Henry destiny pathway, is he the kind of fellow who would like a trip abroad?
Possibly, but I still think that he's likely to stay in England. All the cards are with him, and obviously a performance like that not only gives him leverage in terms of negotiations with Arsenal, if he wants to get a bit more money out of them or a bit more assurances about where he's going to be played, but I also think it gives him massive leverage as regards anybody else who might be interested in him, and I'm sure that his agent will be very, very aware that whatever they might have been looking at in terms of any negotiations with anybody, either as a pre-contract now or at the end of the season, they can pump up what they were going to be asking for.
Andrew Thomas, a.k.a. Twisted Blood, says man of the match at the Emirates, Azlef, referring to the fact that Arsenal had a day off because of the tube strike on Wednesday. So, given that one team did play Wednesday, the other didn't, and given that the last 20 minutes is where it all really swung for Arsenal, was tardiness actually a massive factor in this game?
I think you can certainly point to that, yeah, because it was the scoreline perhaps doesn't really fairly reflect the way the match went. It was pretty close up until that third goal. One thing that I don't think has really been mentioned is that Walcott's third goal was an astonishing goal.
It was
in the middle of this 7-3, and it was his hat-trick goal. So it didn't really get the... If it had been the only goal in a 1-0 win, we'd be raving about it. But it was...
Where do you think it stands in the goals of the year? It's pretty extraordinary. A lot of times we say we like goals when you've never seen anything like it before. To see a player sat on his bum, then get back up and continue on, it does happen, but not very often.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Great, excellent. Newcastle, boo-hoo, twice in the space of, what, 3 days? They scored three goals away at the Emirates and Old Trafford, and both occasions they got nothing.
Yeah, and the worry for them is if they lose Demba Ba, the way they're playing at the moment. I know that they scored three goals, but they scored three goals, but he got two of them. And the way that Cisse's been playing this season, again, you worry about how they're going to fare. I still think they would have enough not to go down. They've probably got too much talent to do that. They're probably too good to go down, Newcastle.
Right.
But if they lose him and they don't replace him properly, it could be a bit of a squeeze.
Well, that's probably enough for part one, but don't worry, listeners, we've got plenty more for you in this, the final pod of etc. and so on, after this. Breaking news. Hey, Hammers fans, this means you, Jacob. Your team are in for Gael Jive and Marouane Chamakh and Solomon Kalou. Have some of that.
I know, brilliant.
Is that good? You don't seem terribly excited by that.
He had Jive at Blackburn, so,
Ryan,
you know. Chamakh, nice hair.
Do you think?
No.
Okay.
Kalou's a good player, though.
Right.
Kalou is a good player.
He's having a terrible time, a torrid time at Lille.
He's got one more Champions League medal than any of us.
That's true. But then again, so has... Who's
Jimmy
that?
Traore.
Yep, there you go.
And Eagle Biscuit.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Aston Villa Wigan.
It's just really sad what's happening there, because that you don't want to see that happen to a young side, especially one where a lot of the players have just come up from the Championship in League One and League Two, I think, as well. but Lambert's just got it slightly wrong. I think it's a gamble too far signing those players without any Premier League experience. And I don't want to sort of...
When Norwich came up there, everyone was raving
about
the fact
they had two promotions in a row.
Right.
So
doesn't that make it even tougher?
No, but... It's hard, but there's still a feel-good factor at the club, whereas Villa have had a year under McLeish, a year under Houllier, so they've been on a downward spiral for two seasons.
And they don't have two seasons of playing together.
No, it's just a team that's been thrown together at the same time. It's not a team that's come up through the youth system together.
How on earth did this Villa side win at Anfield a couple of weeks back? Mysteries of football.
Well, they were improving at the time, and it all was beginning to look quite nice, and it's that... You wonder with a young team with that 8-0 defeat at Chelsea, I mean, the psychological scars and all that. I know it's a little bit of a cliche, but I think it's probably had a reasonable impact. I mean, you can explain the 8-0 away at Chelsea as just being a bit of a freak result. Losing 4-0 at home to Spurs, if Spurs get it right, and they've done that a few times this season, they're very, very difficult to stop. The Wigan result is the one that's the big worry. And he has said, Lambert has said, or intimated, that he'll be looking at some experienced players in January.
Right. Okay. Randy Lerner was there. As far as I know, stayed till the bitter end. But a lot of people are wondering if the bitter end for Lerner at Villa might not now be too far away. In the meantime, Wigan go above Villa in the table, at least until they face Man United on New Year's Day, while Villa go to Swansea. Which doesn't sound like much fun for them, does it?
No. Wigan beat United last season.
Oh, so they did in that extraordinary final run.
Yeah.
Do you see that happening again this time, Jacob? Find the word no.
Probably not.
Right.
Probably not. But you never know with Wigan. When they get it right, they can be very, very tricky to play against.
Right. And of course, New Year's Day last year. Need I remind you?
No one played football. No one played football. It was That was New Year's Eve.
That was New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. New Year's Day last year, no one played football.
Well, Sunderland beat City.
Right.
Yeah.
That was on New Year's Day, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Glad we cleared that one up. Now, all sorts of excitement and surprises down in the relegation battle, because, of course, Southampton became the first side to score more than one goal away to Stoke this season in the Premier League. 3-3 there. Extraordinary.
Really not the scoreline you'd expect at the Britannia.
No Shawcross, though. Perhaps this was influential for Stoke.
Yeah, he's important in the back for them. The defending on the goals was pretty shambolic from a Stoke perspective. But Stoke's first and third goals were absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, particularly Cameron Jerome's thumping last-minute equaliser.
Mm. Some Ricky Lambert praise?
Ricky Lambert love.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I was always very sceptical about his ability to adapt to even to the Championship level when he came from Bristol Rovers, although he's been prolific lower down the leagues. So he sort of looked like one of those slightly lumbering...
Workman-like?
Guy who could bully defences and was good enough to score a lot of goals in the bottom two divisions, but perhaps wasn't going to be good enough to do it any higher. And I'll admit, not to the first time, to being entirely wrong. He's been superb.
I'm just wondering, with the way that the whole kind of physiognomy, if you like, of the Premier League is evolving and changing, now, if it might not be an even bigger ability or an asset to be able to bully defenders in the Premier League. If you can get away with it against the rough, tough, rugged fellows that you might encounter down in the lower nether regions, then by the time you come up against all the arty-farty Euros types that you get now in a Premier League back 3-4, maybe a bit of rough is exactly what you want. I don't know. I'm just asking.
Yeah, Grant Holt sort of proved that point as well last season. And I think there is perhaps something in it. You know, Norwich's players having come up through the division. The counter-argument to that is the struggles, I suppose, as we said, that Villa have had with putting players together from that kind of level.
Right.
But I think there's teams don't do it enough, don't give players from the lower leagues a chance, he says, waving his
lower league
football league flag.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, your lower league corner on its way, John. All right, Reading won. Jacob, you were there.
Yeah, but Reading always beat West Ham. I said this on Thursday, so it's not a surprise. If they were going to win one game this season, apart from the one game, the one against Everton, it was going to be against West Ham at home.
Right.
They didn't actually play that well, Reading. Oh. They were gifted the winner after 5 minutes by James Collins. Second time he's done that with that back pass. That it was a lovely finish by Pogrebniak, but there you go. And then they were basically hemmed in for the rest of the game. Allardyce said afterwards, he kind of gets mixed up sometimes. He went, if you want to tango, and then he sort of thought, oh God, how am I going to finish this? if you want to tango, it takes two to tango, and Reading didn't want to tango. He was saying they played too defensively.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, up next for West Ham is a trip for Norwich, which, as you were pointing out, is huge. In your words, huge. Why?
That was Allardyce's words,
actually. Oh, did he say that it's huge?
A big test of their nerve.
All right. Yeah. Because you haven't won a game since Diami got injured.
No, they haven't won a game since beating Chelsea at the start of December.
Wow.
Yeah, no, 6 points above the bottom three. But it would take an extraordinary feat of incompetence to go down, which isn't always... Extraordinary feats of incompetence isn't always beyond West Ham's capabilities. But I think when they do get their injured players back, and if they can spend a bit in the January transfer window, then they should be fine. I can't see Allardyce going down.
I think Vaz Tay coming back is quite an important...
Yeah, although he missed that...
apart from that header at the end.
But usually you would expect him to score that before he's been in this year. So, yeah, they've missed him a lot, and they're missing Diame as well.
Mm. When's Diame due back?
A couple of weeks, they're saying, yeah.
Okay, you're six off the drop now. Fulham, just four off the drop now. They're a terrible run, just one win in 12 continues. Danny Graham getting the goal this time in an away win for Swansea. Moving right along. We're moving along, aren't we? We're not going to dwell on that.
Fulham ended up with Breda Hangeland playing up front.
Yeah?
Yeah. Which I read one report saying was a complete betrayal of Fulham's philosophy.
Right, but they've done that before. I seem to remember Roy Hodgson sticking him up front.
Yeah, but Martin Jol's meant to... I don't know if he did, but Martin Jol's meant to have, this love for playing great attacking football with the likes of Ruiz and Berbatov, and they end up playing...
It's time for them to dig deep and roll up their sleeves, though, at Craven Cottage. So
put the big centre back up front in Robert Huth style.
Right. Now, Norwich, who will beat West Ham on January the 1st, got beaten by Man City in a bit of a thrilling 4-3 match.
Yeah.
Yep. Some opening goal, that. Although I wrote that at the time, and now I can't remember what happened in it.
It was a chip by Aguero to the far post for Silva, who a lot of players would have just...
Oh, is it the one where it was all one touch?
Yeah, a lot of players would have tried to volley it and score, but instead he just cushioned it brilliantly into Dzeko's path, and Dzeko took it first time, just guided it into the bottom corner. That's what, the great players do, or really great teams do. They score the easiest goal possible in the hardest way possible.
Mm. Very nice. Producer Ben says, Nasri red card, discuss.
What I liked about that was that he got taken out by Bessong and he was rolling around, and then suddenly he got up again wanting to look like the hard man.
It was a hard challenge,
It wasn't a great challenge, but the way he was rolling around and then suddenly he was up again, jutting his head into Bessong.
That's biology.
Suddenly his anger overcame his fear.
So the adrenaline surged through. It's like when you cut your arm off. You've had this, surely.
Cut my arm off?
Yeah, and then straight afterwards you deal with the lion or whatever, and then afterwards you cope with whatever limb you've lost in the shark attack.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's how I found it.
You're in the middle of a shark attack after being bitten by a lion?
Yeah.
Jeez.
It was one of my better afternoons.
I'd be putting my head to the shark's forehead. Isn't that what you're supposed to do to a shark?
You're meant to hit them on the nose. I was late for work the other day because there was a man who was taking an extraordinarily long time to explain on the radio how he survived a shark attack while surfing off Australia. He kept going on about the shark going round and round him, which built the tension up brilliantly. But I'm going to cut to the chase and just say that eventually when the shark then swam off a bit to line himself up for the attack, then swam straight towards him, the fella, rather... counterintuitively, jumped off his surfboard because he didn't want to leave his legs dangling in the water, so he completely immersed himself, faced the shark, and at the right moment swung the pointy end of his surfboard straight into the shark's nose, and the shark went, "I'm not having that," and swam off.
Wow.
In this analogy, would Nasri be the shark or the surfboard? I think he'd be the shark.
No, I don't know.
That song is the surfboard.
Hmm.
Yeah, right. I think that covered the topic pretty well.
Well, we ought to say that it was a definite red card and it was violent conduct, and a lot of people have said, "Oh, that's a bit harsh," but it's violent conduct. It's a definite red.
Yeah. So he'll miss the game at home to Stoke.
And he'll miss as well Arsenal away. That's nice for him.
All right. Is it a three-game?
Well, yeah, three-game.
Oh, I suppose it would be violent conduct. So he'll miss Arsenal away.
Mm. Well done, Samir.
Good stuff. Now, in other Premier League-related news, Sunderland got beaten by Spurs. Oh, Gareth Bale got another yellow for diving.
Yeah.
The most booked diver in the Premier League.
So, yeah, another one. And, I mentioned the issue in one of the sort of talking points weeks ago when he got booked at Fulham. Something reasonably similar. There was contact, but he went down in...
He says if there's contact,
well, I don't think
it's not diving.
Somebody will have to explain to me very clearly and change my opinion on this, but I don't see that contact equals foul.
No.
And particularly contact doesn't equal an excuse to go flopping to the floor.
Yeah, to stick your legs out, basically.
If you want to look for the definitive proof that contact doesn't mean it's a foul, take Aguero in the last minute of the last second of the game against QPR. Taiwo treads on his foot and he doesn't go down.
No, but he could have.
He could have gone down,
yeah,
but he stayed up and he scored the goal that won them the league. Or go to YouTube and type in Lionel Messi doesn't dive and look at the amount of times he's basically assaulted and stays up on his feet.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he couldn't and rightly receive
right,
the
penalty.
Right, but that shows
it doesn't make you go down.
But you're allowed to have some contact, for goodness sake. This isn't ballet.
Yeah, well, I'm sure in FIFA tours it doesn't say contact. You know, contact isn't necessarily mentioned. It's more about impeding players and blocking them off. And there were, again, like, I guess it's hard to tell. What Bale would say and what AVB would say was that if when you're going at that speed, even the slightest contact can bring you down. And, well, again, I'm not entirely convinced by that.
Yes and no. I think the thing is, the dynamic of a player falling over, I think we can all visualise what happens when somebody is knocked at speed and loses their balance and they go down. There's a way that the body behaves. When Bale goes down, when he thinks he's had enough contact to earn a penalty, is the legs just go absolutely limp and straight and he just falls as dramatic as possible.
The thing about Bale is I can't actually remember him winning a penalty with a dive. He's just not very good at doing it, so maybe he should stop.
And the fact that his attitude is that when there's contact, I go down.
Yeah,
I don't think
he's
a.
He's not doing himself any favours, is he?
No, I think what I'd also like to see is a referee book a player for award a free kick, but then also book a player for diving.
The one as well is just sometimes players just look ridiculous. When Suarez was being pulled back by Shawcross last week, he's being pulled back by his shirt, and then he falls over
forward,
and it was a foul. Mm. It's a clear foul, but that's not the way he goes down isn't natural.
No. I guess what, again, the argument would be if he doesn't go down,
if he doesn't go down, then he might not get a penalty.
But it's still a foul. I think, and you get managers, Pulis is one of the managers who says, my players are far too honest sometimes and they should go down more. Well, referees should be better at spotting
Aguero going
fouls.
Through a few times and he's being hassled and basically fouled and but he stays up trying to get the shot away.
How about a little Theo Walcott this week?
Yeah, well, maybe what should happen is even if you get the shot off, someone like Aguero, he's not able to get the shot off to as well as he liked, so he should be given a penalty.
Well, you can't play advantage and then come back and give the penalty.
Right, but there's no the advantage isn't to the maximum, though, is it?
That's exactly what happened at Bramall Lane, first game of the season, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago now. Liverpool, Steven Gerrard goes through on goal, gets tripped by Chris Morgan. It looks like a foul, but he staggers on a couple of steps and fumbles a shot at goal, pokes it straight at the goalkeeper, and the referee goes back and awards either the free kick or the penalty. And if Gerrard had scored, he would have allowed the goal. That's fairly sensible.
He couldn't score because he was stumbling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, then. Now, the other game that, of course, happened was the fact that at Old Trafford, Man United thinks hard West Brom 2-0, and it was a bit grim. I had a great story the other day about going to Old Trafford. Actually, you know what? It was Eastlands. Forget it. Right.
What was the story?
The story was Tony Cascarino was saying about how he went up to see the last derby, and basically he had to stay 3 extra days in Manchester because he couldn't find his car. He arrived for the game, and he was a bit late, and you know how they put all those temporary car park places up? So he pulled into one, parked the car, and left, and yeah, fine. When he came out of the stadium afterwards, he was a bit late because, you know, doing his press work and stuff, he came out, and all the signs had gone. So now all there were was just a series of streets, and he expected to find his way back by the sign saying he had temporary parking here, but they'd all gone. So he spent days and days and days wandering, and eventually gave up, went back down to London, stayed in a hotel this time while he searched for his car, went back down to London, and then this guy, this taxi driver who'd been taking him around, said, I found your car. So he paid the guy to drive him back down to London and then paid him a train ticket. So it was a vastly expensive trip, and all because when he came out of the stadium going, I'll just go, hey, where's it gone? Interesting, no? It's like those thrillers where, you know, you take the police back to the building where you saw the murder take place, and all of a sudden it's going complete. It's not a warehouse anymore, now it's a block of flats. How did they do that? Anyway, not saying we've not got much to talk about in part three. More breaking news. Wesley Snyder to... Well, no, I'm... I'm just a little bit disappointed now because we were just doing breaking news and it turned out to be Wesley Snyder to Liverpool, and I'm not sure that one's going to happen. A lot of people have pointed out his enormous wages, and Liverpool, I believe, are on quite a tight wage structure, are they not? Equally, he's been linked with Man United. What is clear is that he does need to make a move, and Inter need him to make a move, and he, in fact, publicly said it's best for everybody if he moves on. Where is he going to go? Someone's tweeting in about this. I don't know. You'd like to see him there, wouldn't you, in United? Yeah, he would fit in well there, wouldn't he?
I'm not sure where he would play, though.
Oh.
Yeah, but it would be very interesting to see how he would shoehorn him into the side.
Right.
And with Kagawa as well. But I've heard a few things about him possibly going to United.
United, yeah?
Yeah, in January.
Hmm. Wesley Snyder. I think they were in for him once before, were they not?
Last year, yeah.
Yeah. Right, okay. Ooh, it's Lower League Corner with Lower League Football's John Ashdown. John, where do we begin? Do we begin with firings? Sean O'Driscoll, bong, gone.
Yeah, after a 4-2 win on Boxing Day, yep. Forest's Sean O'Driscoll was binned in favour of Alex McLeish.
Yes.
Much to the chagrin of Forest fans. I find it quite a bizarre appointment. I mean, McLeish is a manager who knows what he's doing at a football club. He can organise a team to play in a quite dire and dour style. But, you know, he can get results. The issue with the Forest thing was the fact that they'd clearly decided they wanted him before getting rid of O'Driscoll. So they fired a manager with the specific intention of getting McLeish. I can understand why a club might kind of eventually fall upon McLeish as kind of like, oh, we've asked a few managers, we've had a few applications, well, this is probably the best we're going to get. Hmm. But to actually kind of directly go for him... Oh, it's my watch going off.
All right.
It's my 10:05 alarm.
What do you have a 10:05 alarm for?
I don't know how to switch it off because I've painted over the button. Well, not the button.
Okay, there's two questions here. One, Jacob, do you want to ask the first one?
I was just going to say that he's got a calculator watch, which is great to see.
That's really cool.
Casio watch.
Yeah. Casio cool, but you painted over it.
Well, I spilt some green paint on it while I was painting a fence outside, and it sort of... I thought I'd fill in the gaps, right. And now I've got a unique timepiece, which is the only one in the world that's like this.
You've pimped your Casio.
Basically, yeah, with a bit of green fence paint.
That's so cool.
Have you got a watch?
Not that I wear, no, I don't.
No calculator watch?
No. Oh. Anyway, Alex Magee, so he started with a point against high-flying Palace.
Yeah, they got a last-minute equaliser, I think I'm right in saying.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a very sort of uninspiring appointment, and I don't think Forest fans are particularly happy, but he may well squeeze them into the playoffs. It's just they won't have a great deal of fun doing it.
Mm. All right. In the meantime, they're not the only team sending manager on way at Christmas. Barnsley binning Keith Hill after getting beat by Blackburn, who've also ridded themselves of Henning Berg. And we were talking about the Chevy Singh conversation before, as was off-repeated in there. Was it 57 days after he started off?
Yeah, 11 matches, I think.
Right,
that's right.
10 matches.
Yeah.
Right? Well, they insist they're going to get a manager with experience, although the latest man they've been linked to is the fellow at MK Dons.
Carl Robinson?
Mm. Well, last time I looked, Kevin McDonald was the favourite, the former Aston Villa second team.
Didn't he say in his infamous interview that not him? Or right. Someone with experience.
Plop, that was Phil Brown's hat. Landing in the ring.
I would like to see Phil Brown there.
Okay. That would be a dream combination to Phil Brown at play.
Here comes a fact from producer Ben. Steve Keane and Henning Berg were both fired after defeats to Middlesbrough.
Hmm.
Thanks, producer Ben, for that one. David Paul, thank goodness for you, because you say, talk about Coventry City. Form team in the country, 6 straight away wins, all-time club record, promotion form, credit please.
Yep, well done.
Come on.
I don't really know what to say about Coventry.
All right. They're in League One, aren't they, Coventry? Yeah.
2 points off the playoffs.
Well, okay. Well, absolutely. Credit indeed to Coventry City. You're 2 points off the playoffs.
And a good win at MK Dons.
Right.
He says, looking at his newspaper.
All right. 3-2. You've caught us a little bit unprepared there with your live tweeting into the podcast, David Paul. How about we talk about Hull, who are pushing Cardiff now at the top of the Championship?
Yeah. Hull are flying at the moment, and it's really impressive what Steve Bruce has done there, I think.
They're like a hydrofoil.
They are. Yeah. They're skimming at the moment.
Yeah.
That's something ridiculous. Something ridiculous, like 11 wins in 17. They're playing wing backs, which is quite interesting in itself, I suppose. When Bruce was appointed in the summer, they'd got rid of Nick Barmby, who was ditched from the club, not really for footballing reasons. It seemed that he'd kind of fallen out of the board, made a couple of kind of not very veiled comments about transfer funds in a couple of interviews with local radio. Clearly, like, there was issues there, and they got rid of him. And that's getting rid of club legend is bandied about a bit too much, but he was something of a club legend there. Brought in Steve Bruce, who it was fairly underwhelming at best. But the way he's got them playing at the moment, you wouldn't be surprised if they got. Well, they certainly wouldn't be surprised if they finished in the top two.
Right.
Part of the reason why everybody is still quite optimistic about their promotion chances in the Championship is that Cardiff City are the team that are leading the way at the moment. They're, I think, 5 points clear at the top.
Yeah.
And, of course, Cardiff, famous chokers, so we're expecting their great collapse anytime soon.
All right. And Crystal Palace, are they beginning to choke a little bit as well?
Yeah, they've just had a few, just gone slightly off the boil. They're still bubbling around underneath, though.
All right. We mentioned League One. Sheffield United, your team, John, where are you? Just second place?
Well, we were top before the weekend, before yesterday's fixtures. Was that the weekend?
Was the weekend, yeah.
Well, we were top before the weekend, and bottom of the table, Hartlepool, who had won one in 24 matches before that, turned up at Bramall Lane and turned us over 3-2. Unbelievably.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, incredible. That was the result of the day, really. So now Tranmere under Ronnie Moore are back on top.
All right.
It's going to be a bit of a blanket finish there. It's one of those divisions that seems there for the taking, but I don't think anybody's going to run away with
it. A blanket finish, is that when you can throw a blanket over all of them?
Yes, I think that's right.
Good, okay. Yeah. Let's have a bit of love for Bournemouth and Eddie Howe.
Yeah, why not? I mean, Bournemouth's 2012 started with Eddie Mitchell's sweary rant on Five Live when he made Chappers very angry.
Yeah.
And they started this season horribly. They won one out of their first 11 games. Were in the relegation zone and reappointed Eddie Howe, got him back from Burnley. And since
he hadn't been having too much fun.
No, he'd not had.
He was kind of the local hero there before he went off to Burnley in search of brighter prospects.
Absolutely, yeah. Very young and up and coming guy. Came back with them in the relegation zone after one win in 11, and since then they've won 10 and drawn 3 from 13.
Right,
they're now fifth.
It's an extraordinary graph that John showed me this morning. It shows their form, and it's all below the line, horrible, 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 and then suddenly it goes whoop, past the line and above it, and then it's terrific, 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 and the point at which it crosses the line is basically when Eddie Howe comes back.
It's literally when he comes back. Yeah, it's like looking at a series of skyscrapers in the reflection of a pond, or perhaps the English Channel off Bournemouth.
Or a very long waveform, perhaps.
Well, I preferred my skyscrapers, oscilloscope, to be honest.
Producer Ben wants to mention the chairman's wife, which I'm very happy to do because that was great. When the chairman's wife came, it's not the chairman's wife, it's the owner, who's a Russian fellow, Denim, I think. I think he's Russian. And supposedly, in the midst of the really rotten stuff last season, his wife came in to say a few words at half-time.
This was the sweary rant
incident.
This is when he had to go on. He defended the fact that she'd been in the changing rooms at half-time. And he was saying that she just wanted to wish the players well and hadn't given the team talk. She just wanted to say.
Right.
And then he said bad words.
I like the other version better. Good. Richard Wilkinson says, mention Chester FC. They went bust in 2009-10. The new fans club has won two promotions and is currently 15 points clear in Tier 6. They've won 20 of 22. How about that, Chester? How about some posts, eh? A Cerulean Blue calms me. A discussion about toughest managers on the league. In the league on the pod, and it takes everyone an age to mention David Moyes.
Right, but we did mention him.
We did mention him, though.
Yeah.
But it took us an age.
Yeah.
He says this, or he or she, Cerulean Blue calms me, says, Martin Yole is obviously the strongest, but Moyes is one Scottish, two more mobile, and three has those eyes. Who cares about the other 18? The final fight would be between these two. Rally St. Clair says Roberto Martinez is surely not all that in a fight. I don't know about that, actually. Lots of people mention Andre Villas-Boas, who we did forget to mention in the you could take them category. Moyes is pretty scary, says Riley St. Clair. Scropodopoulos, Martinez will just play dead, and then when you think he's down and out, he's up and at you.
But Villas-Boas looks like Hank Scorpio from the supervillain in The Simpsons. So, you know, he would have henchmen, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
One man who I'd like on my side in the fight is the Leicester manager, Nigel Pearson.
Right.
who's kind of, yeah, he's big and... Yeah, I've got a kind of thing about him at the moment. I kind of want him to be my friend. I'd like him to come round to my house and help me lay a patio.
Nigel,
something.
If you're listening, where do you live, John?
Well, I'm sure he can.
It's not really patio weather,
me.
Though, is it?
Hmm?
It's not really patio weather at the moment.
No, no, but,
on
you know...
the spring.
He's the sort of person, though, when you're in his presence, you think he'll just be very competent at everything. You know, he wouldn't have any experience at laying a patio, but he'd right. come round and he'd probably do a quite handy job helping
probably
you.
Probably done a better job painting your fence green without getting all your...
yeah, probably would. Yeah,
yeah.
He would have done. Yeah.
All right, Damon Buckley wants Tony Pulis. Yeah, we mentioned him. Anyway, that's managers getting rough. James Beaver, will 2012 be remembered as the year Messi broke a record or Downing finally scored? What do you think, Jacob?
Probably the former.
Super duper. How would you remember 2012? Here's Jay Patel, in fact. Obvious one, but what was your standout football moment from 2012?
I think possibly... It was either Phil Brown accusing Andrea Pirlo of homophobia. or more,
give us the context on that one.
He said, why don't these players want to come and play in the Premier League? Why does he want to stay in England? Why does he want to stay in Italy? Maybe it's because he's homophobic. I don't know.
He wants to stay at home. Maybe he's, yeah.
More seriously, I still always think of Chelsea winning at, not the Champions League, but winning at Barcelona.
Right.
That was incredible.
The Ramirez goal?
Ramirez goal, Torres goal, and...
The Gary Neville goal.
Gary Neville's goalgasm and... Terry booting Sanchez up the backside and everything. Yeah, crazy night.
Crazy night indeed. John?
I think at one end of the spectrum, just that final afternoon in the Premier League weekend.
Yeah.
And the way it climaxed in what will probably be the greatest, well, it could well end up being the greatest finish to a top flight season in our lifetimes. And at the other end, the Chelmsford City free kick. One of the worst free kicks ever taken. Have you seen this? Where the player is on the edge of the opposition's penalty area. He is about to run up and take the free kick, stumbles into it, kicks it about a yard in front of him, and stands there as the opposition team charge past him and go up the other end and score.
Wow. You
can find that on YouTube.
It was the year. It's been a year of some amazing goals. No, I'm really thinking about
Zlatan.
Zlatan.
Yeah.
Falcao.
Which goals?
Well,
which
ones? I mean, the one for Colombia was pretty extraordinary. Everyone was YouTubing, but obviously plenty of the
ones against
Atletico
Chelsea
ones.
In the Super Cup, and the kind of identical one he scored against Bilbao in the final of the Europa League.
Yeah.
The one where he cuts in and curls them in with his left foot.
Some of Neymar's have been absolutely stupid, as usual.
The problem Messi has now is that there's this programme on last week about Messi on Sky. And it was basically just a collection. It wasn't really telling you anything. It was just basically an excuse to show all of his goals this year. And you kind of watched him going, yeah, that's really, really, that's brilliant. But, you know, you've kind of done it now. And he keeps on doing it. And every time he does something brilliant, you sort of shrug your shoulders now.
Mm. You like the unexpected, the not seen before.
They are unexpected, though. But it's just he does it so often that you're not surprised anymore. Mm.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's another couple of... Is it the year that defending died? Asked producer Ben, by the way.
No.
No, okay. There you go. Good news for defending. given that we are halfway through the season, says Mike J. Bain, who do the panel think will be in the top four come the end of the season? Name the top four. You don't have to necessarily do it in order, although that would be nice.
Manchester United will, I think, win it.
Yeah.
City, Chelsea, and then it's between Spurs and Arsenal.
Yes.
And I wouldn't put it past Spurs to blow it again.
All right, then. John?
I think the same apart from I reckon Spurs might just... sneak it ahead of Arsenal.
Okay. What's everyone's favourite cheese? That's Romford Reject. There's no place for that kind of talk. What is your favourite kind of cheese? Do you have one?
Extra mature cheddar.
Really?
Yeah.
Of all the cheeses in all the world?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm not saying there's not a case for it, just slightly surprised.
I'd go for a nice brie de mou.
Really? Yeah. I don't think I could pick a favourite cheese.
I like Osso Abrati.
Okay.
Italian one.
Yeah, essentially, you don't want any cheese on its own in isolation. Even the very best cheese,
You're
going to get bored of after a few mouthfuls. Mm-hmm. You want a cheese board, but then we need quite a long time to design your dream
ideal cheese board.
Your dream cheese board.
Yeah, dream cheese board. Right, will Bale get to 10 yellows for diving this season? Asks MH. He's not quite on track, is he? Is it four or five
four.
So far?
It's four.
Five. So he's pretty much on track. Given that this is the time of year when the player's player of the year is voted, says Ultorion, who will win? Who do you think is going to be player of the year?
If they win the league, it will be Van Persie again.
Okay.
Yeah.
John?
Yeah, no, I think that's entirely right.
Right. Curry House of the Year, Rutland Curry Club. Jimbo, can you give a shout-out to our club, please? They've just won it. It was won by Paddy's Martin Inn in Leicester. It doesn't sound like an Indian, but believe me, it's great. Wow. Paddy's Martin Inn. All right. All right. Well, final thing, perhaps, from producer Ben, who notes that the word Zlatan has made it into the Swedish dictionary. It might have already been in there, to be fair. I'm not that hot. My Swedish lexicon isn't what it might be.
Maybe it's Christensen to tell us.
Yeah, we should do, really. Mm. Anyway, it means to do something extraordinary, outlandishly talented, possibly while curling your lip at the same time.
In the Champions League.
You leave that alone? And
Is it in as a verb then? So can you Zlatan something, or do you?
He absolutely. If you're Sean Ingrid,
that's very Zlatan.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a verb. He's
Zlatan. That was a real Zlatan. That was.
Yeah. Which other? This is producer Ben. It's a bit late for this meme, but we'll run with it anyway. Producer Ben wants to know which other footballers should be verbs.
To Heskey.
Well, there's a lot of them out there, and they're mostly negative, aren't they?
They would be.
Yeah.
Did you hear about my running with Kurzakov?
No.
During a minute by minute in the Euros, I said, you know, he was absolutely terrible for Russia, Alexander Kurzakov.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm nodding, but of course I don't.
He missed a lot of chance. You didn't watch the Euros. It's fine.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about moments of the year. Spain. We were stunned to of course Spain.
But
we were stunned to find there'd been a European Championship. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
He's forgotten again.
No, we had. Yeah, we did. We realised this morning that it must have been quite a forgettable tournament.
It
was a good tournament. It was a good tournament.
No, I did remember one or two things: Italy losing 4-0 to Spain in the final, and Italy Pino's beating penalty. England
and Germany. Yeah. But anyway, I was doing the minute by minute on the England Italy game, and De Rossi missed a really easy chance just after half time, and I said he Kurzakov'd it, and I thought nothing more of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a little joke in a minute by minute, and then about 2 months later, during the Olympics, I got an email off a Russian magazine saying, "Hi, could we talk to you about your use of the word Kurzakov, because it's gone massive in Russia."
Really, Jacob?
Yeah, and they asked Kurzakov about, and Kurzakov was actually asked about it, and he got really annoyed and said, "Oh, maybe in England they don't have enough words or something."
Well, it's very, very true. Well done, Jacob, for coming up with that.
Doing something 6 months ago.
Yeah, very good, and remembering it now, which is not the easiest thing in the crazy, crazy, hectic, news-packed world of football. That though is it for our final instalment of this year. What a year it's been, I'm asking because I genuinely don't remember. And that's it. We'll be back with the start of a brand new year on Thursday. But I won't be, actually. I'm going to be away. Who's taking over for Max Rushton's in for Thursday. There you go. I'm away on Thursday. But I will be back next Monday, so I'll see you then. Do enjoy yourselves on Thursday. Happy, happy new year to everybody. And especially to you, Jacob, you, producer Ben, and you, John. And Amy Lawrence as well joined us. And you, listener, of course, especially you. And we'll be back in 2013. Woof.